Welcome to the NOLA Drink Show. Join us as we explore the world of drink, food, and culture in New Orleans and beyond. Here's your host, Brian Diaz.
All right, everybody, Brian Diaz here. Thanks for tuning in to the NOLA Drink Show. As always, friends, it is a pleasure, and I am happy to have you here with us. Got a really good show for you this week. We're going to be chatting with a vodka producer, Umberto Lucchini, who is with the Blood, Sweat, and Tears Vodka. He's one of the co-owners. They're out of Eugene, Oregon. And we're going to be chatting with Leedy Vancavage. And Leedy is with the Best Friends Animal Society, a very fine nonprofit that advocates for animal shelter reform, animal welfare, limiting or ideally eliminating the euthanization of shelter animals. They have a goal, no kill by 2025. And you may say, well, why vodka producer and a nonprofit that advocates for animal welfare? Well, how do we put these two together? Well, it's a really interesting story. One of the co-owners of Blood, Sweat, and Tears Vodka has an adopted pit bull named Mr. Pickles. You'll hear about Mr. Pickles. And kind of just became connected to the cause. And they reached out to the Best Friends Animal Society and got involved with them as a partner, assisting with fundraising and doing all kinds of interesting things to work with them, and just a big supporters of the cause. So certainly we talk about vodka. We're going to sip on one of their lovely expression of vodka. But we're going to be talking a lot about animal welfare and why that's important to all of us. In fact, one of the things that I don't think we actually say, I think we talk about it on an annual level, but something like 1,700 cats and dogs are euthanized in the United States in animal shelters every single day. And that is something that the Best Friend Society is looking to stem the tide of, if that's a way to say it. And again, their no-kill 2025 goal is a very admirable one, and it's a very fine organization, so we'll be talking a lot about that. Got a really good show coming up for you next week, friends. Our beer guys are back. Yes, our unpaid beer correspondents. You might have been wondering where they were. Matt and Sal will be joining us, as they usually do. And as you know, if you listen to the show regularly, we generally do a show on beer and some topics connected to beer. We might talk styles. We might talk trends. We might talk just the industry in a broader sense. We've done things where we've specifically talked about hops. We've specifically talked about barley. And these guys are walking encyclopedias of beer. Matt is a certified beer judge himself, but also the brewmaster at Old Rail Brewing Company, located in Old Mandeville, right across the lake there from New Orleans. And Sal Mortellaro is a Grand Master Beer Judge with the Beer Judging Certification Program. He is the highest ranked beer judge in the state of Louisiana, and actually one of 70 or so Grandmaster beer judges on the face of the earth. So these guys know their brews. That is an understatement. And they're good friends of mine. It's always a pleasure to have them on. That will be our show next week. We'll be taping that one over at Old Rail, which should be really good, because Matt's always very hospitable when we're there, and he's always making up some interesting brews. So I'm sure we'll be sipping on some of his stuff and get into some topics in the world of suds. That is the plan for next week, friends. We'll be on the lookout for that. We've got some other cool stuff coming up that we're working on right now. Once again, we have partnered with Tales of the Cocktail. Yeah, you heard that show last week, right? Where we did our Tales of the Cocktail annual preview with Caroline Rosen from that fine organization. They've changed, as you know, their plan. Normally that is a physical event held in July in New Orleans every year, and they're doing it virtually, like a lot of us are doing these things virtually, right, these days, September 21st through the 24th. But as we did last year, we partnered up with Tales to do some really interesting programming. Some of it was fun, just fun, interesting, historical cocktail stuff, and then we did a spate of issues on social issues in the hospitality industry, and that kind of kicked off our sustainability series, and we're going to be doing that again. We haven't necessarily set the specific ones up. I'm currently looking at some of the seminars and presenters and things like that. We'll be putting together at least a couple, maybe three, four shows built around those seminars that address social issues in the hospitality industry. And if you have not seen this stuff before, I encourage you to go to our website, noladrinks.com, and just scroll down the homepage, and you will see a banner for the sustainability series, and go check it out. It's environmental issues, social issues in the hospitality industry, all kinds of really interesting stuff. And we do shows on a regular basis, as you know, that address this stuff. And we wanted to kind of put them all in one place if that's what you're interested in checking out. So again, go to noladrinks.com, look for the sustainability series, and you will find it there. Friends, we're going to take a little break here on the NOLA Drink Show, and then we are going to come back and talk about animal welfare. Come on back.
I was born by the river in a little tent, yeah. Just
All right, everybody, welcome back to the program. Brian Diaz here with you, WGSO 990 AM in New Orleans and in podcast land, wherever you may be. Thanks for listening into the show, friends. Always happy to have you here on the NOLA Drink Show. Hope everyone out there is doing well. As you know, we have a really interesting show here, and we have two great guests who are joining us. First off the bat, Umberto Lucchini, who is the founder and proprietor of Wolf Spirit Distillery. Umberto, how are you?
I'm doing well. How are you?
Doing well. Great to chat with you again. You and I had the pleasure to chat a couple months ago, I think, and I'm glad to have you on the show.
Yeah, thanks for having me again. I really enjoyed it, and I'm looking forward to this one.
Yeah, absolutely. Well, thank you. And also, Lidi Vonkovich. I'm not getting it.
Vonkovich. But I answer to anything. I'm a lawyer and a lobbyist, so yeah, you can call me whatever.
Sometimes it's like I will have mental blocks, and this is apparently one of them. So, Vonkovich.
Dan Cabbage.
Okay, I'm just going to call you Lidi moving forward. And Lidi, sorry about that, Lidi. Lidi is the senior legislative attorney for the Best Friends Animal Society, and which is a very fine nonprofit that works for animal welfare. And is it fair to say, Lidi, animal shelter reform and how we approach this?
Yes, we want to get the nation to no kill by 2025. And thanks to you and Umberto, we have a shot of getting there and everyone in your audience.
Oh, that's fantastic. Well, thank you. And so this is, you may ask, how do we have this pairing here? And Umberto is with Blood, Sweat, and Tears Vodka as well. And they have a passionate connection to what Best Friends does and are highly involved in supporting the organization. And actually, why don't we start there, Umberto? Tell us a little bit about the brand, but why you guys are working with Best Friends. And I think there's a story about someone that we need to know called Mr. Pickles.
Yeah, definitely. Mr. Pickles is part of it, crucial part of it. I'll start far away and make my way to where we are now as fast as possible. But I was born and raised in Italy, moved to the U.S. 15 years ago with a big liquor business. And then a couple of years ago, I went my own way following the American dream and set up Wolf Spirit as a distillery, as a bit as a brand incubator of creating brands that have a meaning, a story behind it that is true, authentic, and meaningful for society and for the people. Now, why do I say I start very, very far? Well, when I was age 7 back in Italy, a little kid in a typical Italian family, I went to see my, we always used to go over the weekends, we used to go and see my uncle, aunt and uncle in Tuscany. And one Saturday afternoon, my aunt and uncle, they used to have a German Shepherd. And one Saturday afternoon, I show up with my parents. And while they're in the house talking and eating food, which is basically what Italians do quite a lot.
No, that's not, never heard that before.
No, I mean, the beauty of Italy, to be honest. Anyway, I went out. I was 7 years old. I just went out the house to play a bit of basketball or whatever ball was available. And unfortunately, the German Shepherd, something happened. Obviously, I can't have that clear recollection, but I was attacked pretty badly, and a lot of scars in my legs and still a few in my head. And just the shock, obviously, that was very, very big. Thank God it wasn't life-threatening. But for the next 10 years, actually, until I was nearly 17, I was literally terrified of dogs, and to the point where even just a little puppy would change the side of the street. And what changed that was actually my dad got a big black dog. I can't remember what race or anything, and he just said, "Umberto, either you die or you get over it." And at home, and that actually helped me a lot, and basically turned what was a big fear into a lot of respect and a lot of love for dogs in the specific. Fast forward where we are now. When I set up Wolf Spirit Distillery, I through my business partners and friends, I got to meet Ben. I'll just give you his name, Ben Green, who was trying to find a way around his life and a meaning to it. And our idea was to get him to learn how to produce vodka. How crazy is that, right? go on the internet and try to figure out how to make vodka. And we bought the equipment and everything for him to really start the craft of vodka, basically. Produce a vodka that he liked in flavor, that we liked, obviously, and make it his job for life, because he really wasn't sure what he was doing. And all this, by the way, in Eugene, Oregon, up in the Pacific Northwest. And along the way, I got to meet his dog, who is, in the end, the chief commander of the whole company, which is a rescued pit bull called Mr. Pickles. And the meaning of Mr. Pickles goes beyond the meaning of a rescued dog, as much as that is very, very important, obviously, and at heart it does. It's the fact that it gave a companion to somebody who was trying to find his way in life, and gave a reassurance that he had somebody at home who was always there, cheerful, to welcome him when he was having bad, hard days. And just to see him and Mr. Pickles together really inspired this need of doing something good for the community related to pets and dogs in this specific case. And the further element, or the bigger component to this, is that the whole brand Blood, Sweat, and Tears was really built under an idea of misfits. I really struggled in corporate world, and I always considered, and I think the corporate world considered me a misfit internally. Ben obviously was a misfit in his own world, and if you think about it, pit bulls are misfits in the dog community. There's always a negative perception around them when it's really not justified. And so it really felt very homogeneous, to the point where we actually put a picture, or there's an illustration of Mr. Pickles on the bottle, because we do think it's integral to the story of the brand and the meaning of the company. And so as we launched the brand, we basically start to look, what kind of organization could we help that fit our own philosophy? There's plenty out there. So the issue wasn't the choice, it was more about the fit with what the brand represented. Mm-hmm. And Best Friends, it really was instantaneous. I mean, we connected with them. I had a meeting. I went to LA. I got to meet the unit in LA, and it was pretty instantaneous, and it was a no-brainer to partner with them. So that, you know, our effort in the vodka business, which is obviously, like any business, very money-oriented, and in these times, it is being challenged, obviously. We still felt like it's important to think at a broader story, and a story that touches everyone in the company in the end. Mm-hmm. It's a small organization, but all the employees we have had or have dogs within their household, or there's a story, like in my case, which is highly related. Mm-hmm. I don't have a dog myself, because he or she would probably hate me because I travel 75% of the time, but I wish I did. But
as a pet owner, you always have to be fair to the animal, right? I mean, that's such a big thing.
And but I did have a reemergence of affection for dogs when I really feared them, and I really obviously had an issue with that. Mm-hmm. So that, but, sorry, I took a bit of time, but
that's
the story of where we are.
That's great. And then it frames the story really nicely. I want to be clear too. So Ben is the distiller and the owner or co-owner, right, of Blood, Sweat, and Tears Vodka, right? So leading, I think I like the slogan, because on the Blood, Sweat, and Tears Vodka side, if I remember right, I'm going to paraphrase, I think Sally, was misfit people paired with misfit canines. And right. I think lots of times when we talk about lady shelter animals and things like that, that, you know, we're sort of maybe talking about misfits, but there's so many, I think, misconceptions about shelter animals, how animals end up there, and then really what can be done about it. I know it's a big, broad question.
You know, Brian, you're so right. And Berto, again, thank you so much for this opportunity for the dogs, because it really, you know, they are all individuals just like people. And again, every dog has its own story. Every cat has their own story. And many of them end up in shelters through no fault of their own. Their owner might die. I mean, with COVID, we are seeing that, you know, it's tragic. Their owner might go to a nursing home. They might be lost because of a natural disaster like a fire or a hurricane. Mm-hmm. You know? So again, these animals, some are misfits, but it's not really their fault. They end up in the shelter, and it should be our responsibility. I mean, that's what Best Friends is all about. Best Friends is all about community supported sheltering, trying to get more people to foster care. So even though you travel a lot, you could foster care a dog for maybe a week or two, you know? So again, trying to get more people involved with their local shelter to volunteer, to donate, to save lives, you know, to foster care. It's been pretty amazing during COVID because we thought we would see an influx of animals coming into the shelter, but communities stepped up across the board. And we saw just at Best Friends shelters, we saw a 46% increase in foster cares, which is amazing. Wow. During a pandemic.
Yeah, this because people were at home and took the opportunity to do so. That's great.
And okay. They want it. And again, it's much easier to get a dog adopted if it's in foster care than it is at a shelter, because, you know, it likes to sleep in the bed. You know, it has these habits, you know, it likes to play fetch. So you're able to market it a lot better. But the reality is pretty stark for animals in shelters. It's gotten better, but there's still 625,000 dogs and cats that die each year in shelters. Cats are the most at risk, and the shelter are the states that are the highest killing states are states you wouldn't necessarily think are the highest killing. California, Texas, North Carolina, Florida, and unfortunately, Louisiana.
Mm. You were telling us that before we went on air, and in some ways it's surprising, and in some ways it's, I guess, perhaps not. But is it something, and I know that you just said every animal has its own story, so I don't want to overgeneralize, but do we find that, aside from things like when we talk about somebody dying or natural disaster, do we find perhaps maybe in some of these states that people think, oh, it's what a great idea to get a pet, and they don't really realize everything that comes along with it, the responsibility and all of that?
Their responsibility, but again, as we were talking about misfits, our breed discrimination against pit bulls, our German Shepherds, our Dobermans or Rottweilers, whatever breed of dog, there are a lot of reasons why those dogs, large dogs, what I like to call short-haired, muscular mutts,
okay, shelters, right. Sure.
You know, because of housing discrimination, because of insurance discrimination, because a lot of housing complexes wrongly discriminate against breeds of dogs, where they should look at the behavior, not stereotype because of breed.
Okay. And that's also, I think, a really important thing too. You guys, we're going to take a break here in just about a minute. When we talk about behavior, because I think a lot of times people don't understand too, the process can very often happen where if a dog is demonstrating a bad behavior, they're euthanized so quickly as opposed to taking the approach of rehabilitation or changing the reality of how and where the animal is living.
Right. Changing, you know, looking at the owner. And a lot of times, you know, obedience classes are sterilization. I mean, the vast majority of dog bites come from unsterilized male dogs. So sometimes just a little snip might help.
There we go. Well put. Well, let's do this, you guys. Let's go ahead and take a little break here on the show, and then we're going to come back. We're going to talk quite a bit more about Best Friends Animal Society and what it's striving to do, No Kill by 2025. I'd like to have Leedy touch on that. And we're going to taste some vodka and do some other fun things. So, friends, we're going to take a little break here on the NOLA Drink Show. Come on, man. All right, everybody, welcome back to the show. Thank you very much for listening in this week. Happy to have you here on the NOLA Drink Show, listening here with with us today. We are chatting with Umberto from Blood, Sweat, and Tears Vodka and Leedy from Best Friends Animal Society. A really interesting conversation. And we were talking a little bit. So you mentioned, Leedy, that cats are kind of the most at risk. But when we look at the canine world, pit bulls, because they're sort of really a misunderstood breed. We were talking about Mr. Pickles, Umberto, and I know that that's, you know, with Ben having Mr. Pickles as a pit bull. Tell us a little bit about that relationship. You talked about how he was there to cheer up Ben when he would come home from work.
Yeah.
But we know that that breed is sometimes very much misunderstood, and it's an important part of what you guys are all about with the brand.
Yeah, the brand is really, I mean, there's a movement that started before the pandemic, thank God, but it's definitely still valid now. It's called a bit the makers movement, and these are people who kind of move out of corporate world and try to make through their own passion a profession, and this is really driven by you know, the ability nowadays of working outside an office environment, and also the dissatisfaction of what corporate world delivers in terms of lifestyle. A lot of commuting, a lot of hours sitting down and watching a screen. So all this big movement, we are a segment of that. And we are, let's say, the misfits within that segment, the ones who actually really try to make their give a meaning to their life through purely their passion. Money is important. It really is, because you have to survive and you need healthcare. But once you check those boxes, it's really about the quality of life. And there's a little, it just doesn't fit against the norm of society. I think the pandemic is making a lot of people realize that, mm-hmm. unfortunately or fortunately, but it could have done it in a less dramatic way. But a lot of people are realizing that time goes by and years go by, and you're giving away a lot of opportunities to fulfill your passions. And so that's really the thinking behind Blood, Sweat, and Tears, which is really the journey that we took in creating the vodka. Along the way, Mr. Pickles was crucial to Ben, because you really have to think, Ben used to work in a tattoo shop. He's tattooed all over his body, head included. And the moment, and I don't want to speak for him, I mean, it wouldn't be fair, but the moment he shows up, just because of the tattoos he has all over his body, your perception is, okay, I'm going to get hit or mugged or something. And
right. And
that is totally the opposite. He's the sweetest guy that you can imagine. And so being judged by the cover is a famous story. Don't judge a book by its cover. But the reality is he constantly gets judged just because of his looks. And pit bulls are exactly the same. And I thought, and he went for a pit bull for exactly the same reason. He's like, I'm a misfit, and if society judges me, I'll have a pit bull, and they can judge me and him, and we are one and two and in one. And again, it's his way of saying to society, stop judging by what you see, but more by what you do. And it really, that really inspired us. His story really inspired us in creating a brand that is not afraid of saying what it thinks and doing what it believes in.
And supporting Best Friends, as you mentioned, it is a great tie-in. Well, Leedy, when we talk about that, and I mean, and you mentioned sort of the as you put it, the short-haired, muscly dogs, I think is how you said it. When we look at sort of the broader spectrum of shelters, and this was something when I was looking at the organization, just getting prepared for today's show, and I guess I kind of knew this, but I didn't realize it, that when we sort of the traditional approach of animal shelters going back, I guess, up until about the 80s or 90s, was these were basically just slaughterhouses, right? Yes. And so there's this whole transformational approach of what a shelter is supposed to be, the role it's supposed to play, and then how we can work with, like how you guys can work with a brand like Blood, Sweat, and Tears for support, and how you can raise awareness and these sorts of things. Can you speak to that for a minute?
Yeah. And, you know, and again, I think Blood, Sweat, and Tears just exemplifies what you go through with, you know, pit bull terriers, that you love them and, you know, you fight for them and for the animals in the shelter. Because in the 80s and 90s, it was really bad. We were killing about 4 million dogs and cats a year. So we've gotten better, which is good, but it was, I started the Humane Society back in the 80s, and our county didn't have a good adoption program. They had killed or sent to research or put in a gas chamber over 4,000 dogs and cats, and they had only adopted out 14 cats and 68 dogs.
Wow.
And I was incredulous. This was a county I grew up in, and I didn't know that. You know, so we incorporated Farm to Humane Society. The first year we did 800 adoptions. The next year we did 1,000. But the county was still killing thousands of animals. So luckily that has changed. But again, you know, like catching and killing animals, it doesn't work. You know, we've been trying to do that for years and years and years. And, you know, again, it's insanity. You're doing the same thing over and over again. And when you go to shelters, you don't see many Bichons or poodles in shelters. You see pit bulls. You see big Rottweiler sort of looking dogs or hound dogs, you know, and again, all dogs are individuals, but it's the pit bulls that really have bared the brunt of their bad reputation and their bad rap, you know, and again, they're individuals. I'm in my 60s. I own two pit bull terriers, and people are always incredulous, you know, when they see me, you know, this overweight white woman with her two pit bulls, you know, they just can't figure out. Whereas I think probably Ben, they would be more like, oh yeah, of course he'd have one. But me, people are, you know, kind of shocked. But, you know, I've never had a better dog with my cats. You know, these guys love them. So again, they're individuals, just like people.
Right. That makes sense. And is it fair? I mean, and obviously as being a responsible pet owner has so much to do with this, right? I mean, you need to provide love and support and shelter and discipline, right? I mean, this does have to happen.
Oh yes, you do. Yes, you do. You have to know how to say no.
Right. Okay. Got it. And so now with this idea, and we're going to take a break in about 2 minutes, you guys, the part of the Best Friend Society, the whole goal is what you guys are calling No Kill 2025. Can you tell us, and we'll come back to this after the break, but can you tell us about that?
Sure. So we're trying to get every shelter in the United States to no kill by 2025. So we need everyone's help on this. And basically that means saving at least 90% of the dogs and cats that enter every shelter. 90% is the floor. It's not the ceiling. You know, some shelters now are saving 98%, you know, which is amazing. So yes, we think every shelter in every community can do this.
What has stemmed the tide there? Is it education? Is it awareness? Is it outreach for adoption? Is it sort of,
you know, I think it's a lot of mass sterilization of animals, a lot of education, and people, you know, view them as more as members of the family. Dogs have moved from the barnyard, you know, to the backyard, to the bedroom, you know, and it's nice to have when you come home to have somebody wagging their tail. My husband doesn't do that for me.
My dogs do. Right. Right. Hopefully that's just, you know, figuratively, right? Literally, I hope he does. But well, let's do this, you guys. Let's go ahead and let's take our break right now. And we're going to come back and we're going to chat further with Umberto and Lady Sofrenza. Come on back. Welcome back to the show. Brian Diaz here with you, WGSO 990 AM in New Orleans and in podcast land, wherever you may be. Happy to have you here on the NOLA Drink Show. Friends, we are chatting with Leedy from the Best Friends Animal Society and Umberto from Blood, Sweat, and Tears Vodka. And we're talking about some of the approaches to animal shelter and animal well-being. And this is a super It's an in-depth topic, and I think a lot of people out there probably know that, and we could talk for hours about this. There was one other thing, Leedy, that I wanted to ask you to make sure that we got in, because you guys are taking a very proactive approach to change, I think it's fair to say, change the culture of how we look at animal shelters and how people interact and can get involved and make these changes. And you guys have some really well-thought-out positions on all kinds of related issues, and we'll tell people about the website to go check that out. But one that's always been a concern to me, so I want to bring it up, is puppy mills. And if you would kind of share some thoughts on that and tell people what a puppy mill is if they don't know in the first place, and then how it's a problem.
Yeah, so puppy mills are large-scale commercial breeders, and they raise a lot of dogs and puppies and keep them in substandard conditions, you know, wire crates for their entire life. They breed and breed and breed and breed the dogs, and you know, sometimes the puppies you get from them are not socialized. You know, they don't, you know, they're not used to people. They're, you know, it's kind of like a factory farm for dogs. So they're horrible things. And they do exist in many states. Some states have tried to regulate them. And we are seeing more and more cities enact, and some states, three states now enacting the ban of retail sale of pets. So it, like retails, pet stores can have adoptable dogs like pit bulls and, you know, all sorts of dogs and cats there, but they can't bring in dogs from puppy mills.
Have we seen, because thank you for saying that, because it's really, that's what's driving it, right? These sort of I'll call them big box pet retailers that are out there. Are we seeing some of them step up to the plate actually and work with shelters to help get dogs adopted and cats adopted?
Oh, yeah. No, like, you know, PetSmart, Petco, you know, do wonderful, wonderful things. And even some of the smaller pet stores bring adoptable dogs in. And that makes sense. You know, again, they have a lot of people coming. The more pets the people have, the more dog food they'll buy and things. So it makes sense.
Have you seen that little puppy in the window, right? I mean, it's exactly. The people exactly. Are passing by. So that's great.
And there are wonderful websites now where you can go and see the pets, you know, and have actually virtual pet visits, you know, to see how the animal is in the foster care home and how it's doing. I mean, it's really, you know, things are changing, and we're trying to get more of the animals out of shelters and into homes, like even foster care homes.
That's great. I want to tell listeners out there now, because you two are going to stick around for our podcast only segment, Another Shot with Nola Drinks, and we're going to talk in some more detail about some things when we get there. But here on the radio, here on the Nola Drinks Show, you two, we like to say we explore the world of drink, food, and culture in New Orleans and beyond. And Nola Drinks is in the name, and so we are kind of talking about vodka here today. And so we talked about Blood, Sweat, and Tears and its story, Umberto, a little bit. Really nice vodka. I've had a couple sips of it. Really great flavor profile. Tell us a little bit about the flavor profile and kind of, I know that you said Ben, reading up on stuff, you know, Ben went through a lot of iterations to find the formula, if you will, to make it, but it's really nice and smooth and vanilla-y. And yeah, go on, please.
Thank you on behalf of Ben. My contribution wasn't very big there. But we threw away a lot of vodka along the way because as much as it's probably the easier one of the spirits to produce, it still requires a craft and a process to learn. Now, the objective we had was to give a bit of character to a vodka and because the trend is to actually look for flavor without having a flavored vodka in itself. That process has been long and a bit complicated, but in the end, we figured out a way, and I'll simplify it, especially for the listeners. But our vodka is three times distilled, and freeze filtered. Now, very simply, a lot of the vodkas you distill many times, less than two. You probably don't want to drink vodka. I mean, that's actually dangerous. So two is the kind of the minimum. But you can go as much as you want, honestly. Now, the more you distill, the purer the vodka is on the good side, in a certain sense. On the negative side is that it has literally no flavor. At some point, you're just drinking neutral alcohol.
Right.
And that may be good to produce hand sanitizers, as we know now. But it's not really what the consumer wants to retain. So we stop at three times. so that we can retain a bit of the character. However, three times leaves it a bit less pure than four, five, six, seven times. Here is where freeze filtration comes in. And again, very simply, freeze filtration, you take, if you ever do chicken soup, and once you've done it, you stick it in the freezer. After a while, you realize the fats and the solid will separate. Now, don't do it with chicken soup because it's pretty bad to eat after. But we thought that that's what we are doing. We are basically separating the impurities by freezing it, a bit more the impurities from the good stuff. And that extra round allows us to avoid further distillation. So by freeze filtering 28 degrees Fahrenheit, we avoid further distillation, which would take away flavor and character to the vodka. The reason why not many in the US, only one other company does it, and everybody else avoids it, is purely a cost reason. It's not because there's anything inherently wrong. It's not, and it's not something that we patented or anything. We decided to do it purely because we wanted to find the right balance between the purity that vodka needs to deliver, but the character and flavor that consumers are looking. So this is, yes, it is good with your classic martini, but bartenders like it because they actually play with it in a cocktail, because it actually, it's not just a neutral spirit they put in a cocktail. It modifies the flavor of the drink as well.
Umberto, I'm getting, go ahead, please. Go ahead.
Just to end, because of its name, it's particularly appreciated in Bloody Marys. And since every day seems to be a Bloody Mary day in many ways.
Yeah. Right, absolutely. Well, I, you know, I'm getting on this really a nice vanilla, kind of a creamy vanilla note is really apparent. And then I'm getting a very nice sort of white stone fruit, almost a kind of peach note.
So all the ingredients are from the Pacific Northwest, and it's a wheat vodka based from wheat from the Washington State. And the wheat is very, very soft in the Pacific Northwest. You ask why? Well, imagine how much rain it gets. So the rain obviously makes it for a much softer grain. And wheat, corn, I mean, all the grains there are particularly sweeter in a certain sense.
Mm-hmm. Great. You guys, we have about 2 minutes left before we're going to close out the radio portion of the show. Umberto, I'll come back to you. Tell people where they can find Blood, Sweat, and Tears Vodka website and online, which I'm sure then will lead to telling people where they can buy it.
So we are in 35 states. Okay. So that's pretty, and definitely all the big ones. So if you go on our website, which is bstvodka.com, there's a great store locator that literally points it to the closest store next to where you live first. And second, you can actually order online directly from our website, so that if you don't want to go out and face the realities of the world outside, it will be delivered right at your footsteps.
Check your local laws, but yes.
Oh, yeah.
Right. So bstvodka.com, right? And what about Facebook and Instagram and all that?
Yeah, BST Vodka for both. And we are present on both Facebook and Instagram. And on Instagram, actually, we're running a whole series of stories, of which Mr. Pickles is a key component of it. So
great. And I know also on the website that you can find a link to Best Friends Animal Society, right, and help support their cause. So, Leedy, will you tell people where they can find out more about the organization, donate, get involved, all that good stuff?
Sure. Go to bestfriends.org. And if you want to check out what's going on in your local animal shelter, you can. We have a list of the stats for every animal shelter in the United States that we could get. So if you go to bestfriends.org/2025, you can find our dashboard and see that.
Great. So another way, so you can connect with your local shelter that way through yes, you guys as sort of an umbrella organization. Well, you guys are doing fantastic work. And again, as I mentioned, Umberto and Lita, you're going to stick around here for another Shot with Noel Drinks on our podcast only segment, friends. And if you are listening on the radio, as I always do, I encourage you to go to our website, noeldrinks.com, to get the podcast, because that's where the action is. And you'll hear this extended conversation that we're going to continue on with them. I'm going to ask some hard-hitting vodka questions, and we're going to talk a little bit more about animal welfare and a few other things. But friends, if you are listening on the radio, always happy to have you here. Thanks for listening in. Please remember to take care of one another, always be kind to one another, and as always, use your turn signal. Cheers, y'all.
shy. What are you doing in a place like this? I said I called your name, but no one came. Now I see you become just like the company you keep. And he said, all these saints and all these sinners will try.
All right, everybody. Yep, another shot with Noel Drinks. Thanks for sticking around. I hope you are enjoying this conversation with Leedy and Umberto. We're going to bounce right back over to that conversation. We're going to talk a little bit more about vodka and such in this one next upcoming segment. But of course, we're going to talk about animal welfare too. Continue that part of the conversation. So here we go. Yep, another shot with Noel Drinks. Thanks for hanging around, friends. Happy to have you here. We are chatting with Umberto from Blood, Sweat, and Tears Vodka and Leedy from the Best Friends Animal Society. And as always here on the Noel Drinks Show, interesting conversations between the lines, as I like to say, or outside the lines, perhaps, when we're talking off the air. And Leedy, you were telling me something really interesting. You mentioned that Louisiana is one of the top five kill states with animals being euthanized in shelters. But you were just telling Umberto and I something very interesting and shocking, really, about dog fighting and what happens there.
Yeah, the victims of cruelty. So in Louisiana, there is an archaic statute that says the dogs seized in fight busts are contraband and they have to be immediately euthanized. So again, like any puppies, any dogs seized in dogfighting, the animal control officer can kill them right away, and it will not be civilly liable or criminally liable for killing them, or allowing the owner to have any due process protections for the dogs. So it's really a horrible, horrible, archaic statute. And luckily, there was a bill introduced last year by Senator Carter in the state Senate to try to get rid of this section. And because of COVID, of course, it went nowhere. But we're hoping that that the Louisiana legislature will act next year to at least change this, like seven other states have done in the last 10 years to get rid of this. Now there are only seven states left that have these sorts of bad, dangerous dog laws.
Wow. And sometimes it's not surprising that Louisiana is on those lists, unfortunately. But thank you for telling us that. I'm going to ask you one other question too, Leedy, because we were talking about this during one of the breaks, and I spared by the long story here. My first nonprofit job was working for a bird observatory, and so near and dear to my heart. And there's always been, a lot of people probably don't know this, there's been this sort of push-pull thing between feral cat colonies and as a way to deal with protecting cats, in a sense, and then wild bird populations. And it's been a big polemic, and there's no easy answer here. But you and I were chatting during one of the breaks, Leedy, about this, and we tell people kind of what your thoughts are on it. I mean, it's a sensible approach. Excuse me.
Yeah, we are trying to reduce the outdoor cat population, but you can't do that without birth control. I mean, we have tried, shelters have tried for the last 50 years catching and killing cats, and it doesn't work. There's still oodles of cats outside. What works is targeted, trap, neuter, vaccinate, and return the cats. So that's what we're promoting. These are community cats, and we want fewer cats, but you ain't going to get there without birth control. As right. I was mentioning, kitties can't use condoms. You need mass sterilization of cats.
So the idea, and thank you for saying that. So the idea is then to reduce the feral cat population so they're not procreating and they slowly those numbers dwindle, because we've noted that cats will sometimes hunt for pleasure or food, and birds can sometimes be a target for that. So wild bird population. And you aptly mentioned too that really we're also facing more important issues of habitat loss and climate change and these sorts of things that are affecting bird populations. It's not just feral cat colonies. But
and Best Friends, we love birds too. I mean, we have wild friends. We have, a wildlife rehab center. So we have a parrot, section if you want to adopt a parrot. So, you know, again, there's a lot, you know, trap, neuter, return just makes sense. That, and it's cost effective. It's a lot cheaper to usually, you know, take them in, sterilize them, put them back out to where they were living, you know, and they were healthy, than keeping them in a shelter and then euthanizing them and disposing of their body. So again, you know, if you're looking at cost effectiveness, trap, neuter, return actually is cheaper usually than catching and killing.
Right. Okay. Thank you for sharing that. That's an important, as I mentioned, an important issue to me. And so I appreciate what the approach of Best Friends is there. Umberto, I wanted to, so I told you that when we kicked over here to the in between the podcast segment and closing out the radio portion of the show, I have a soapbox issue when it comes to vodka. And we were talking about this with the way you guys make vodka, and I really liked what you said about the approach of three times distilled and then the freeze distillation as a way to maintain character in vodka. And there's this ongoing debate, and I sometimes have debates with my bartender friends and just other friends, because there is a world of people out there who think that vodka is supposed to be this sort of colorless, odorless, neutral, rather boring sort of spirit. And sure, I guess that plays a role. But, you know, I always ask the question, okay, if that's the case, well, how many of those on the market do we actually need? You know, we only really, if that's truly what it is, then probably two or three is adequate to supply that need. And I don't want to create monopolies here. But I'm a big fan of what people like you guys are doing, in that you're trying to make something that actually has some taste and has some character and has some nuance and something different. And I think we're seeing more of that out there. So that's my soapbox issue. And I mean, I'm sure that's probably why you guys are doing what you're doing, but I just wanted to get your thoughts there and then talk a little bit further about how you know, achieve what you achieve with the vodka.
Yeah, I'll be very honest. Even in all the years in the liquor business, I always, in the end, thought vodka. And I managed a big U.S. brand. I had the privilege of working on a big U.S. brand, and I did think that in the end it was a lot of marketing compared to other brand products that have a lot more effort put behind generating flavors and obviously more distinct flavor profiles. I think the TTB made the decision recently to allow vodka to state flavor as a distinct characteristic. That is in recognition of the big effort done by small distillers in creating vodkas with character and flavor. And so honestly, if the craft movement, which is being killed, to be honest, by this pandemic, if the craft movement didn't make the effort in creating vodkas and pushing the boundaries of what vodka should be, and not just a marketing play, but actually a play that can deliver flavor, we would still be talking about the usual, yeah, either you come from Russia or somewhere in the Nordic Scandinavia, or you're a big American vodka brand. And
with a Russian name. Right. Go on. Sorry.
So yes. So this is another example of why the country needs craft producers, not just honestly in spirits, but because every Apple and just a name or Amazon used to be a small craft producer. That's the reality. It's always done by individuals who then become bigger and bigger and bigger, and then it becomes multinational and they lose soul and a bit their story sometimes, not always. But I it's really saddening to see what these last months have been, unfortunately, creating for the craft movement. It's a bloodbath out there, and it's unfortunate, and it's still not over. That's the problem.
Yeah, and I appreciate you saying that. I think one of the things that we see, which is a big problem, is that with a lot of the bigger name recognized brands and then certain well-established categories, we'll say, of certain spirits, when a lot of the on-premise disappeared, their off-premise picked up, and maybe it didn't make up the entire difference, but it made up a lot of the difference. With craft brands, when you don't have the on-premise presence, those are the gatekeepers. This is how you learn about craft brands, is typically going from a craft cocktail bartender is going to be the one who introduces you to that so often. And when you take that away, it makes it really hard. And I would say this too, which I'm sure you're preaching to the choir here, that during these times, people are spending a lot of money at liquor stores and grocery stores on booze. But if you're looking at something that costs, say, $40 and you're not 100% sure what it is, people are not taking that leap because if they're not being introduced to the spirit. You can't go out and taste it.
That is very, I mean, totally on point. You have to add the little psychological impact of how is your grocery store or liquor store experience nowadays, honestly.
Mm-hmm.
I mean, you go inside, you're fully masked. Sometimes you have a very limited, you don't want to spend time, honestly, inside a store figuring out, oh, what should I buy tonight for my friends? No, you got to go for price, convenience, and safety.
Get in and get out. Yeah,
get in and get out. Oh, I know this brand. I haven't drunk it since college, but I know it, so I'll buy it again. And why should you even explore something that is, yes, more expensive, but a bit unknown to you when you don't want to spend time, honestly, in the store?
Yeah.
And that is hurting us way more than the big brands are benefiting from that. Although in the end, what's happening is a big destocking in the market. So the distributors are obviously the most exposed because they have suppliers on one end and retailers on the other, and they need to stay in the middle and get money and spend money at the same time. So what's happening? They're running down inventory. So it is the numbers may be very, very positive if we look at, and definitely it is true. The retail is compensating for the shutdown in restaurants and bars, but the financials and the dynamics within it have a few success stories, but a lot of, unfortunately,
a lot more sad stories, right? Yeah. Let me ask you one more question here, Umberto, too, because we're talking about making vodka with character and doing something, you know, different. Tell me what your thoughts are on this. I actually think very often, especially in the United States, we're really bad. We always want to put things in little clearly concise boxes. You know, we do that with music, we do that with art, we do that with everything. And I think when it comes to spirits and especially clear distillates, I think people have a hard time getting their head around, you know, they want to put it in the vodka box or they want to put it in the gin box, and maybe they want to put it in the Blanco or silver tequila box. And if they don't fit in those three boxes very neatly and easily, then people are confused. And what I always like to tell people, there is a whole world of distillates out there, and there is a whole world of clear distillates out there that don't fit neatly in those boxes. Do you think there's a struggle and a dynamic there too, especially like with vodka, to educate people that it's a broader category or can be a broader and more interesting category than what they're maybe used to?
There is, but I don't think it's American specific. I travel and I am exposed to a lot of Europe through personal and professional reasons. And I assure you, America is slightly, even in a certain sense, more sophisticated in liquor than some European countries where, mixology is happening, but honestly, beyond the gin and tonic starts to become complicated. And so I think it's a natural tendency of human mind of being attracted by simplicity and boxing and having things in boxes, organization and all that. The exception is people who need confusion and out of chaos develop things, but
right.
Boxes and organization. And so I have to say that I've seen and I've worked on spirits that, I mean, you look at grappas, you look at eau de vie, you look at Armagnac and all those phenomenal. There are some phenomenal products there. There's the cachaça if you go to Brazil. They're all, but they don't fit in a clear box to the American consumer. They're lost.
Mm-hmm.
Or if you start with something like vodka in Italy and it's like, I'm not too sure what I'm going to do there. I'm more used to my Amaris, my whiskeys and all that stuff. So it really varies by culture, but in the end, it's hard in the liquor business, which is probably of the consumer goods is the least innovative. Purely because consumers like to explore up to a point. You're available, definitely available to try the next phone, whatever brand it is that is going to come to market. I don't know if you're going to try a next new spirit. New vodka, but a totally new spirit, I don't know, because you're anyway ingesting it and putting it in your body. So there's a bit more conservatism in the alcohol business than in many other categories. And so that prevents us from pushing the consumer to explore more.
Yeah, and this is where I think that such that key role we're talking about bartenders, for example, being the gatekeepers. They're the ones that are going to, it's going to be on the cocktail list, and you're going to go, oh, what's this ingredient? And they'll pour you a little quarter ounce pour to try it, and this is where you find this new stuff.
That little advice has no value. It's incredibly valuable. Sorry. Mm-hmm.
No value. Yes, right. Thank you, Umberto, for all of those thoughts. I appreciate you. I knew you and I would probably agree on that entirely, but I wanted to get that out there because it's one of my, as I said, soapbox issues these days. Well, Leedy, let me ask one last question before we close this out here. You have a bottle of Blood, Sweat, and Tears vodka behind you, and you were talking during the break. So what are you going to have tonight? You're going to have that, and you're going to mix it with what?
Pineapple juice.
Pineapple juice.
I tried a shot yesterday and it was really good, but then I wanted more. So I tried it with orange juice and that was good. But I think the pineapple will just set it off very, very nicely.
I think you're right because I like that. Like I was talking about that sort of creamy vanilla tone and I'm still getting that kind of white stone fruit kind of note in there. And that's going to go great. I mean, I'm just enjoying it neat at room temperature. It's great. But I think that pineapple juice is a good idea. So let us know. Will you report back to us how that turned out?
I will, sir. Okay.
Thank you so much. Well, Leedy, tell people one more time where they can connect with Best Friends, please.
So please go to bestfriends.org. And if you want to join our action team to get your community no-kill, just go to bestfriends.org/action.
Excellent. And all this, of course, will be in our show notes, friends, on the website. So you'll find the links and everything there. You don't have to write it down or rewind unless you want to. Umberto, tell people where they can find Blood, Sweat, and Tears vodka, please.
Yeah, you go online and our website, bstvodka.com. You'll have all the information on where to buy it and how to buy it. And also the possibility of donating to Best Friends. We are also selling some t-shirts, that are Mr. Pickles focus. So you have Mr. Pickles proudly standing on your t-shirt, and all the proceeds from the sale of t-shirts are going to Best Friends.
Fantastic. So
that opportunity as well on our website.
That's great. And a great way to bring Mr. Pickles home if you can't quite ready to take on the responsibility of having a pet. You can still bring Mr. Pickles home. Right. Awesome. Umberto Leedy, thank you so much for your time. It's been a pleasure chatting with you.
Thanks much.
Always a pleasure.
Thank you. Thank you. Friends, we're going to take a brief musical interlude and I'll be back with my parting shot. All right, everybody. Thanks for listening into the show, friends, this week. I do appreciate it. I hope you enjoyed that conversation, got something out of it. I'm sure at the beginning you're thinking vodka and animal welfare. What do those two things have in common? Well, hopefully you came away learning the connection there between Blood, Sweat, and Tears vodka, as well as Best Friends Animal Society, a very fine organization. And this is our parting shot, friends. A lot of obviously what we talked about, animal welfare, and in part, the goals of the Best Friends Society, Animal Welfare Society, to eliminate euthanization in animal shelters in the coming years. And it's a very admirable goal. I would encourage everyone out there that if you can adopt, that would be great. Remember, as we touched on, about 1,600 to 1,700 animals are put down every day in shelters in this country. Adopt if you can. Maybe even foster if you can. That's also a great way to go about stuff. And the Best Friends website, bestfriends.org, is fantastic because they can link you up with shelters in your area where you might be able to do that. But one of the things that we also talked about that's very, very important is if you are going to adopt an animal, and a lot of people, especially during the pandemic, apparently have been doing that, make sure you can be fair to the animal. It's such an important thing. I think a lot of people jump headlong into pet ownership, especially dogs and cats and things like that, that take a lot more care than, say, a goldfish. No offense to goldfish. Got to feed them and you got to clean the water, so on and so forth. But you know what I'm saying? That, ones that require, more upkeep, more expense, more hands-on ownership, if you will, of the animal. It's much more difficult than a lot of people think, and people will jump headlong in without understanding the responsibility, the financial obligation, so on and so forth. So if you are thinking about adopting, please be sure that you can be fair to the animal and take care of the animal, because after all, part of the goal here is to reduce the number of animals actually going to shelters in the first place. So don't be a cause of the problem, be a solution for the problem. And if anything, if you can't adopt a pet because it's not the right decision for you, then maybe just support your local animal shelter in some fashion. You can volunteer, you can donate money. They are always having different types of events and things like that that you can support that give them badly needed funds. Friends, that's our parting shot. Here's to you.